Hello, everyone.
Hello, Internet.
Welcome back to Bite Marks. We've got a actually special episode today because today we're doing a Q&A. Woo!
We never got to do our like 200 subscribers special that we had planned because of COVID restrictions and everything. But I'd like to sort of dedicate this as our 250 subscriber unofficial special.
Yeah. It's a special occasion. Everyone celebrate. Bite Marks is 250,000 subscribers. We'd just like to take a moment to thank all of our listeners. Thank you guys for, you know, listening to us on YouTube or, you know, on Spotify or wherever. We really appreciate it. And we're trying to really bring Bite Marks to another level. And, well, is there nothing more YouTube than doing a Q&A? I suppose an apology video where the thumbnail is just Callum and I with our hands in our mouths, just looking completely shocked. I'm so sorry
that we haven't taken bite marks out of anything. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, man.
We should have done a cooking channel.
I'm just thinking now that out of all of the things that we could have done for an opening jingle, you know, we could have just had, like, someone taking a bite out of an apple.
Oh, God, that would have been the worst.
Okay,
please, well, can we never... I'm so glad we didn't do that.
I'm glad... Well, aren't you glad that I went with a royalty-free 8-bit chiptune?
I support that decision 100% over man bites apple.
Okay, so We could go on, of course, but we would really like to get into the meat for today, and that is the viewer questions. So we had you guys submit questions to our Curious Cat, which of course is in the link. It's linked in the description. Please feel free to continue to send us questions. We will just accumulate them like healing potions and then use them all, at the final boss fight, where Caleb tries to take a stage revolt on Bite Marks and turn this into a Pokemon channel.
As soon as I launch my coup, I'll take all the questions that were meant for Emilio and just answer them in a silly voice.
You guys should be watching our streams. The deep lore of Bite Marks is definitely going on there. In other news, all hail King Graham. Okay,
King Graham. I still need the orcs. Before we start, if you guys are listening, send me your pretty, pretty pageant orcs so I can put them up on our socials.
One day we're going to do merch, and Graham is definitely going to be on the merch.
Yeah, hell yeah.
All right, so question one. Anon says, do you like the night or the day?
I like mornings a lot.
I'm a morning person. I'm an early bird. I can say the day.
Wait, no, let me clarify. Yeah, I don't like waking up in the morning. I like existing when mornings are happening.
My favorite time is like 4 o'clock in the morning when no one else is awake and it just feels like the entire world is asleep and I get to be awake and do all the things that I want to do. I love it. It's awesome.
I appreciate those moments a lot.
Yeah, but unlike you, who is maybe going to sleep at that time, I'm waking up at that time. So yeah.
You're a crazy person. I hate waking up. Feels like I have to get my body to like an okay point, like I have to work hard to stop feeling awful, and you just leap out of bed like a magical unicorn.
Well, I do work out twice a day, so maybe that helps.
Oh, good for you.
So let's go to our next question. So the next couple of questions are going to be from Forrest Gladney. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it reads, I heard on Some More News by Cody Johnson, great leftist news channel, you guys should check it out, that the COVID vaccine costs twice as much in South Africa, despite being partially developed in Johannesburg. What are your thoughts on this? So I did actually write a mini article or mini Facebook post on the Facebook page for this. Basically, for those of you who don't know, one of the vaccines that is being developed for COVID-19 was tested in Johannesburg on live subjects from South Africa. Despite this fact, the vaccine company insists that we should pay twice as more than Europe and European countries because, quote-unquote, they contributed development costs. I'm very negative about this. I think that it's basically kind of a vaccine apartheid, to use a very emotive term.
I'm not sure that that word would have is the right one, well, but I agree with you that's not good.
What's happening is basically the vaccines are being sold to countries who can afford to buy them. So you end up in situations where rich countries have, generally speaking, more access to vaccines than they necessarily need. And poor countries are forced to go without and wait for longer. And what this means is the longer we go, well, the longer poorer countries go without vaccines, the longer COVID-19 has to incubate and mutate and develop into something way worse. Generally speaking, I think the strategy is to vaccinate lots of people. It shouldn't just be to wait until there's enough vaccine for the rich countries for them to all be fine and then for us to, you know, play catch up. We definitely could be taking, you know, diverting some vaccines from some parts of the world, at least in small quantities, you know, at least to get our healthcare workers and, you know, frontliners taken care of.
Yeah, I didn't know that we had to pay double. That's a new one. I did know that apparently the vaccines that are coming in now might not be effective against the new strain.
Mm-hmm. Yep. See,
which
this is,
that's terrifying.
Yeah. See, this is what we were talking about, where it's like, okay, well, the longer, you know, the longer many countries go unvaccinated, the longer you know, COVID has to mutate and become resistant to the vaccine. So really, ideally, a global coverage of, like, you know, a lower percent, like, I don't know, maybe something like 60 or 70% of the world manages to get vaccinated, but each individual country, you know, doesn't have like 100% vaccination, I think would be better than just a couple of countries or a handful of countries getting really super vaccinated and in some cases having, you know, vaccine surpluses. And yeah, it's not good. It's not good, folks. We shouldn't be in this position, but here we are because of inequality, in a sense. Okay, so this next question, also from Forrest Gladney, is directed, I think, a little bit more towards you, Callum. I was hoping you could clarify something from the episode on video game prices. Is Flesh Wally made entirely from flesh, or is he like a Terminator?
I can't believe that this is my question.
Well, you came
Emilio
up with
gets
flesh
like,
Wally.
What do you think about the COVID vaccine? It's like, hey, Callum, what's that terrible thing you said once? Okay.
Actions
to be honest,
Callum. You can't just put Flesh Wally into the world.
I'm thinking more of a Terminator thing, where he's got like robot insides, like electronic guts, but he has actual guts on the front.
So does Wally look? Does he still look like Wally, but like the outside is?
Yeah, he looks like Wally, but he looks like Wally, but just replace all of the
robot parts with
all the robot parts with like cold cut ham.
Oh, so he's got like big bulbous eyes.
Oh Jesus! No, I wasn't thinking that. I thought he just had the camera. I'm just imagining Wally covered in ham. Okay, why do we have to take this to a body horror place?
Wally has expressive eyes. That means he has eyebrows. He has like big hairy eyebrows and he's big bulbous.
Well, no,
eyes.
He would have like sausage links.
Ah, oh, that's even worse.
Okay, let's get to the next question. I need to sleep at some point.
Forrest Gladney, you're doing psychic damage to us over here. all right, so I recently saw on your episode on hostile architecture. What do you think could be the outcomes if this continues? I think this is directed at me.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
So hostile architecture is basically just designing architecture in a way that is not receptive to the public. So things like benches that make it hard to sleep on, fences that are like painful to lean against, you know, stuff like that. The idea is to discourage people from congregating. And really what it is to discourage poor people from congregating, right? The rich people never are inconvenienced. I think basically the outcome would be cyberpunk in a way. If we keep designing these public spaces to be basically privatized or semi-public, then the eventual outcome of this whole situation will probably be most of the people in a city or a town or whatever can't actually be in the spaces where they should be. What do you think, Callum?
If we're bringing up game comparisons, then it's probably going to end up being more like Condemned.
Hmm.
Whether the homeless go like nuts. And I can't imagine homeless people living in a city where it's specifically designed to stop them from having any sort of comfort, not then committing various crimes just to get food or to get by. Because it's not like society is super accepting of the homeless already.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a quote, actually, that I brought up on that video. And it was basically something like, you know, society is reflected in, like, our architecture reflects us as a people. So, like, there's a psychological component to architecture, and it's like, okay, well, what is the psychology of a society that builds these prisons, essentially, out of its cities, where the people are free or not free based on how much money they have? And you're totally right. You know, it's counterproductive. Like, the example that we brought up in the episode was, like, skate parks. Kids are going to want to skate, I assume. I don't know what Zoomers do these days.
Well, in my experience, kids buy art at skate parks.
The point is that, like, if you don't have facilities for children to do things, then they will try to do it wherever. And if you build a skate park for people, kids are going to use it, right? But if you don't build a skate park for them, then they're going to, you know, want to do a sick ollie on your bench or whatever. And you have to recognize that there are social needs of society. And if you don't fulfill those social needs, then people will find ways to fulfill it themselves, and often in ways that you don't want them to do. You know, the most egregious example is basically that people who are homeless are way more likely to commit crime. And the reason is not because there's some criminal gene inherent to them, or, you know, it's just because they don't have access to anything that they need to live. And so they, generally speaking, will do terrible things. If we made society better, if we gave them homes, you know, like Finland does, you would see a precipitous drop in crime, because I don't think most people want to be criminals. I don't generally have that viewpoint, you know, of society. You can call me a bleeding heart liberal. Please don't. I'm not a liberal, but you know, it's backwards thinking. It's trying to solve the problem that is actually obscuring another problem. So yeah.
Yeah, it's like the exact opposite of the broken window theory.
The broken window theory?
I was really hoping that you'd know what
it was. Oh, wait, are you talking about broken windows policing?
Maybe. It might be the same. But it's like if you're in a nice neighborhood but one house has a broken window, then it invites, I think, more crime into the area.
I don't think that's... I'm not sure if that's broken windows policing. But yeah, no, I see what you mean. Basically, like, imagine... Okay, so for those of you who have to deal with this, what's one of the trends that I think will happen, you know, for society if hostile architecture continues? Basically, imagine every public space, but that public space is run by a homeowners association. That's really what I...
jeez.
Yeah.
Or rather, just imagine every public space, but, like, every bench and thing that you can sit on is made of hard triangles.
Oh, and you have to pay money to sit on it. Like, if there are, like, spikes that will retract into the bench.
And if you don't, it's like it's like going to a music festival, but no one's playing music.
Yeah. Okay. So, last question from Forrest Gladney. Thank you again, Forrest, for submitting so many. Have you played the Hotline Miami series? And if so, what did you think? Callum, nope. Do you want to take this? You haven't?
I didn't play it.
Ooh. Maybe it's weird how sometimes you're into the games that are ultra violent and then I'm not into those games, but I'm into this game. I'm really into Hotline Miami.
This is not the first ultra violent game you've been into, my guy.
I defer to the viewers as to who is more into ultra-violence.
You're the one who's constantly, like, going on about ultra-violence. We had a whole top five video thing where you were like, I love ultra-violence so much.
Well, okay, I enjoy playing roguelikes, all right? And some of those roguelikes are going to have ultra-violence in them. You know, you played roguelikes as well. Granted, you're...
Yeah, but my favorite games are like have statecraft elements and talking and shit like that.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. I play adventure games.
Yeah, you're excused.
Well, I also play adventure games. I just sometimes...
Then why were you making fun of... You have no legs to stand on in this argument, my man.
Look, your top game was a wonderful journey through philosophy and humor about a skull.
I wouldn't say philosophy. I'd just say that it was. I said it was fun to play.
Well, it's a game about a skull on an island, and he rolls around, and it's a fun experience. My top game was a grim, dark sci-fi journey through decaying space.
I'm trying to see where you're gonna throw this at me.
All right,
because it sounds like you're digging a grave for a certain Emilio here.
So here's my opinion about Hotline Miami. You should play it. I think basically, if you're interested in really interesting storytelling, because I think Hotline Miami has a really interesting way of telling the story, which is basically like a David Lynch movie. Dialogue is not necessarily coherent in the sense that, like, you don't know always who's talking, like, unreliable narrator, your character maybe is hallucinating, maybe he isn't. And in between this interstitial narrative about, like, control and power and, conspiracy is a very violent arcade shoot-'em-up where you are racing from room to room just trying to kill as many people as you can before they kill you, and then you just do it over again. It's like Sisyphus had two Uzis.
Well, and zero rocks.
And he was shooting the Uzis at the rock to get it up the hill every day.
It's like Miami Vice with Sisyphus and the Rock.
Yeah. Oh, I would love a Miami Vice with the Rock in it. Wouldn't that be awesome?
I would love a Greek myth retelling where the thing Sisyphus has to roll up the hill is Dwayne the Rock Johnson. Hilariously, I was actually talking to my dad earlier today about a review. The only time I've ever gotten, like, quote-unquote fired from a game website is I was reviewing a game called Tango Fiesta that I knew about Hotline Miami at the time. And the one thing that I really liked about it is that the instant reload.
Yeah.
You know, where if you die in Hotline Miami, you just come back and keep going. And Tango Fiesta seemed to be doing a similar sort of top-down shooting thing where it was very easy to die, but it had a very long load time and a very, like, you respawned at the beginning of the level. And it's like, if you had just done the same thing, then it would have worked a lot better if it had been instant reload.
That's actually a really interesting point. And I guess I'd like to diverge a little bit here to talk about some game design. So there is something to be said about, like, the way in which your player experiences death. That can really tell you a lot tonally, you know, about the game. Like, for example, with Hotline Miami, you die, you instantly reload. You're never meant to stop and think about what you're doing. And that is both gameplay-wise really, really good, because you will die often. You will die very, very quickly and just jump immediately back into it. But also, you know, thematically, you're not really given moments to think about what you're supposed to do. In fact, when you play Hotline Miami, you'll notice that when you start the game, you know, when you start a level, the music is awesome. The music is, like, pumping and great and synth and all that cool stuff. And then you gun down all the guys or, you know, beat them up or whatever. But then when you end the level, usually the music between levels is very slow and deliberate, right? Because now you're thinking about all the things that you've done. And, you know, the pace slows down dramatically because you're forced to think about, oh, Lord, I just murdered all these people, you know? Whereas while you're doing the killing, everything is fast, everything is quick. You don't even really have to think about it. You just have to click. And a lot of games, I think, tread the line between these two points. Like, for example, Dark Souls. Dark Souls death is very common. It'll happen frequently. Unless you're one of those guys who can play, like, the Dark Souls games without taking a hit.
No, but I see where you're going with this, but I think Dark Souls walks that line very well because, like you said, it's a more contemplative experience, and you have to sort of sit back and think what you did wrong in that situation.
Yeah, exactly. You have to.
Although sometimes it's bullshit, because Dark Souls is bullshit.
Yeah, it would be nice. Because
a naked skeleton came out of nowhere and got you in the back of the head.
or a random ball just, like, rolled down a hill, and you were busy fighting the skeleton, and you didn't hear the ball, and you just got flattened or knocked off a
ledge. Just like you opened the door and there was a pig, and it, or you went into a field and there were three guinea pigs, and it turns out that all of their mouths produce acid.
Ah, man, the basilisks from the first game, I hate that. And also Blighttown. I hate all of Blighttown. Dying in Blighttown was the worst.
Fuck this series. No, I love Dark Souls. Don't burn down our channel, please.
We have a love-hate relationship with Dark Souls.
Dark Souls has abused me a lot.
It's going in the DSM 6, guys. That's what DSM stands for. Dark Souls Mania 6.
No, you know what? If you really want to be mad at me about something concerning Dark Souls, I've never finished the Dark Souls game.
Really? Actually,
any Soulsborne.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Actually, once you've played some of Dark Souls and you've beaten a couple of bosses, you've kind of played all there is. Basically, you've played the core gameplay loop, right? And at that point, after you've had that fun, you know, you've seen the world, you've killed some things, you've talked to a guy named Patches. At that point, if you want to continue the story, then it really like exponentially increases. But you, generally speaking, aren't really going to see much in the way of new things.
But I mean, it's strange because in every game, there's a point where you break through the wall, you know, and the game starts spreading out and doing what it does best. But in Dark Souls 1, there's a very definitive point after you beat the Belfry Gargoyles and you ring the first bell. Then things start opening up. Then you can like explore different areas at different times. And I played through after that point like hectically all the way down to Anor Londo.
Mm-hmm.
And I met the archers. And I gave up. I was done.
I killed.
I'm Orange. Good.
So when I played Dark Souls, I beat Dark Souls 1. I haven't played really Dark Souls 2 or 3 in any detail. But I remember beating Ornstein and Smo after that. And then I took a break for like a year from the game. Just because I felt like, yeah, I did it. I defeated the Dark Soul, basically. Because Anor Londo is really like a build-up thematically. And everything after that is just low. You know, it just gets worse. You know, mechanically speaking, it just thematically, it becomes sadder and sadder and sadder. But let's move on to the next question. Okay, so Anon. Hi, Anon. Says, hi, Bite Marks. Can you please explain the impact of capitalism on the gaming industry? I may be a noob, so pardon my question. I remember PS1 games costing 80 Rand back in the day, and now they're 1,600 Rand. And obviously games have improved tremendously, but surely it's more than that.
I mean, hey, should we just explain the entire premise of our show? That's it.
Yeah, Bitemarks is a podcast about games by gamers, but it's a gaming podcast by gamers, but it's about politics really. And you know, we tried to talk about, you know, capitalism and how it affects gaming. Check out our episode on video game prices for more on that. But I think your question is really an interesting one, right? Because obviously we can recognize that a PS1 game and like a PlayStation 5 game today, there's a lot more work that goes into them. But if you look at like the cost differential, it's orders of magnitude more expensive now, right? And, you could make an argument that maybe people aren't being paid as much. That's definitely true. Like paying 80 Rand for a game, yeah, sure, you know, it can be a luxury for many. It maybe was at the time. But 1,600 Rand for a game now, that's, you know, kind of crazy. Basically,
I mean, it's not just like pricing is the thing. Is it also what gets put out?
Yeah.
Because if you have to look at the games industry like it's the films industry, because the games industry is taking a lot of steps to end up like Hollywood. And because so much money is put into these games, they have to reach a certain amount of money to like have a solid investment so that they didn't lose anything in the production. So they can't really bank their entire game off of some random, possibly good idea. They have to, you know, try and do something that is guaranteed to succeed. That's why we have clones and remakes and spiritual successes.
Yeah, that's a good point. In my mind, there are two big impacts on capitalism in the gaming industry. The first is that it stifles innovation and creativity, right? Because as Callum said, the more time goes on, the more it costs these companies to develop games. But importantly, and I can't stress this enough, the more they expect the games to sell, right? They don't just expect games to make back their money plus a little bit extra. They expect games to sell more than their predecessor. So there's this constant escalation that is produced by capitalism, because capitalism requires infinite growth, that keeps cycling everything up, right? But the other big impact is, of course, that you keep getting less and less and less, right? those PS1 games that you remember, I bet you bought those games, they were fully complete, and you could play them from start to finish, and you probably could unlock like special skins and costumes and stuff like that, you know, by doing in-game things. Nowadays, though, that 1,600 Rand game, you probably could still spend money. Yeah, sorry, I had a hiccup. You probably could still spend money on that game, right? You could play a game and like, yeah, go to the PlayStation store and buy extra things, right? Slowly but surely.
On the PlayStation 1 game?
No, I'm about the 1,600 Rand game now.
Oh, yeah.
On the PlayStation 5, yeah. You go to the store and like, oh, I want that skin, but it's like money? What? I already paid for the game. Why aren't you giving me this? Well, yeah, that's capitalism. They want, in summary, they want you to pay more and give you less. And that's kind of what's been happening.
It reminds me of like a while ago, we were all up on EA's business because they were releasing, I think it was a Forza game or a Gran Torino or something, that had half of the maps and half of the cars of the previous game. But it turns out that their plan was that you could buy like the season pass and then get all of those unlocked with more. And it's this idea that you have to buy special editions and season passes
and DLCs
to get the actual full game that they had intended. But it's why we have loot boxes now. And it's why we have games like Cyberpunk that get pushed out a year before it's finished. And you have to basically spend a ton of money on it to wait another few months for them to get their act together and actually, you know, finish the game with updates.
And also the studios will crunch the staff to do it. Like, no one wants to be in this situation. But the only people who benefit
are any of us.
Yeah, it's not good for the consumers. It's not good for the developers. The only people who benefit are the executives and the shareholders. And that's capitalism, baby. All right, next question. Anon. What do you think would happen if superheroes existed in our capitalist hellscape?
I think, have you watched The Boys?
I was
because it would be that.
I would just say, have you seen The Watchmen? Or read The Watchmen, rather.
I think it would be split in the heart. It depends who gets the superpowers. Mm. You know, if anarchists get them, it would probably be like a Watchmen thing. Mm-hmm. But if like just regular people get them and they start like doing what regular people would do, i.e. showing them off, it would probably end up being like The Boys, where they'd get corporate sponsors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. I think there's only really one way. There's only like one fundamental issue, you know, with superheroes, and that is, how do they relate to power, right? Because superheroes are enormously powerful individuals. So the question is, in our world with capitalism, right, and our capitalist hellscape, is what is the relationship between the superheroes and the system of power, i.e. the superhero industrial complex? Are the superheroes sanctioned by the government? Do they operate, you know, on behalf of corporations? Do they take sponsorships? Can you subscribe to their OnlyFans? I'm sure that would be a thing.
I would love to see Superman's OnlyFans.
You know, I feel it would be really tasteful, right?
Would just be like flying stunts.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, OnlyFans doesn't have to necessarily be pornographic.
Why would you even bring that energy in here? You filthy pervert. Anyway, I just want to add to this whole power dynamic thing is, I remember a conversation I had with a friend of mine a few years ago. I was quite a big Marvel fan at the time. I'm not anymore, thank goodness. And he was a big DC fan. And I asked him one day, like, why do you prefer DC over Marvel? And he said to me, DC is about gods learning to become human, and Marvel is about humans learning how to become gods. Ooh. And I just think the other is more interesting. And that's the thing, is if we gave people superpowers, they would be the very Marvel situation where they would eventually get to that point where they think they know better and act out in some way. And they would learn that they're still mortal, and they'd have to have that whole reconciliation period with themselves and where they stand with their own powers. But unlike a movie, it's us who would have to face those consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I like DC Comics, but I also like them because they made actual detective comics, and I love reading those. I don't think it would be good for the world. Even if there were superheroes, like let's say your anarchist trans cat girl, Nia, becomes a superhero for whatever reason. I don't think that they will meaningfully be able to challenge the system of power, because invariably, you know, if random people get powers, then some people will get, you know, powers, and those people will be more than willing to pony up to the government or to a corporation. And then it kind of just becomes a situation, who wins? The people with powers, or the people with powers and the society behind them, you know?
Well, that, and also, because once again, this isn't a movie, this is real life. Everyone who would get powers and start using them for their particular groups and beliefs and whatever would be very shockingly successful in the short term. But the problem is, there isn't a really big problem on Earth that we can solve with someone with super strength hitting something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like how Superman Red Son is that comic series where Superman is born in the Soviet Union. He crashes in the Soviet Union and he becomes he's like the puppet of Stalin, but then there's like a revolution and then, you know, he replaces Stalin, but he just becomes a totalitarian dictator because, like, he's incapable of understanding, like, or changing really the systems of control. Like, he doesn't think like, oh, I should just, you know, help people, you know, help themselves, you know, produce like a equal society. It's like, people are dumb, I'm smart, therefore I should, you know, rule because I can't trust people to, you know, not make bad choices. And then Batman shows up for the Ushanka.
I want to read this. But,
okay, yeah. All right.
It's a situation where if you're a god, why would you ever consider what's important to mortals?
We don't consider, most of us don't consider the lives of ants. You know, why would a god be any different?
Yeah.
All right. Next question. What are your thoughts on Elon Musk's tweets impacting the stock market as much as they do? Do you think that the uprising of influencer culture has created more instances like that? Do you think it's safe? Oh, Lord.
The idea that Elon Musk is an influencer actually makes me feel sick.
Oh, gross. But he is.
I want to see him in a lot more bikini photos on his Instagram. Like, if he can stop messing around with space and just take bikini photos on Instagram, that's all good with me, bud.
I think there is a big problem, right? Because, like, the stock market is not a real thing, guys. I hate to break it to you, but the stock market is not a real thing. It is an institution that exists largely because we say it exists. It operates on very loose principles.
It's like money or government.
It is a social construct. But it has a lot of power in our lives, right? You know, if the market tanks, companies go under, people lose their jobs, people lose their homes, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that someone like Elon Musk has the disproportionate influence that he does, you know, if he tweets out this thing and people like pick it up and start investing or, you know, moving their investments, it's not really good, right? But in a way, I think,
okay,
like,
so I don't follow Elon Musk's tweets. Has he, like, what has he made?
Oh, he was on the whole buy? He was on the whole GameStop thing. You know,
was
he,
that
like,
him?
Yeah. Well, he was one of the big people who was pushing it. You know, he likes to LARP that he's a man of the people. You know, but he really is just a run of the mill businessman who is very self important. He was part of the people like, hey guys, do the whole GameStop, you know, thing. Maybe we'll do an episode about that, but it really wasn't as good as it seems. I just think that, like, the problem is influencers are kind of the natural outcome of capitalism, because what is an influencer but the commodification of influence, right? Of the idea that you can tell people, you know, that you can commodify giving advice to people. And the fact that these people have the kind of power that they do over our institutions is very, very worrying, because they're not smart, mega-brained dudes, right? They are, in fact, really greedy, selfish, flawed people who should not have that kind of power over our lives.
People are always... It's this whole idea that nerds are some, like, underdog hero of the greatest story of the world. No, you're not. Okay? The world doesn't owe you the happy ending of being a coding giant in Silicon Valley. And that doesn't give you the license to act like a complete tool, because one day you're going to be big and important enough that no one will care. It doesn't work like that. And as soon as we stop people like Elon Musk having that kind of influence over us, then I think the world will just move forward in a much more significant way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Okay, next question, another anon. Why are there diehard Zuma and Trump fans? Simply put, cults of personality. That's like, why are there diehard Christians? You build up a...
Okay, well, let's not make an enemy of everyone here.
No, I joke. But really, I think it is a cult of personality, right? You develop as a politician a personality that you cultivate in the media. And the dogs are barking because they clearly don't like that. I'm being censored. hang on.
My cat's collar is jingling. I don't know if you can hear it.
Okay. Do you want to do a retake or?
No, I think I'd like to keep all of this in.
you guys are getting the uncut bite marks experience, dogs and all.
Well, yeah. we can decide later on. We might release the uncut versions of the Patreon.
Well, you do the audio editing, so that'll be up to you. Anyway,
well, I'll let you. Patreon, if you're getting this uncut version, you're welcome.
So why are there diehard Zuma and Trump fans? Cult of personality, basically. People are attached to power, but they also like to fetishize it. And people who hold that kind of power, who, you know, quote unquote, stand up for their group or whatever, those people get a lot of loyalty. And of course, they tend to reward loyalty with, you know, material advancements and favors and things like that. It's the oldest scam in the book, really.
But it's also sensationalism. Mm-hmm. People are really drawn to big scandals and honestly jokes. Mm-hmm. And Zuma and Trump were nothing if not jokes. They were these crazy big people who did all this stupid, insane shit that it was honestly actually realistically terrible for their countries. Mm-hmm. But you read about it in the paper and you kind of go like, haha, lol, I can't believe he bought a house that costs more than our national budget.
Yeah, you know, in a way, Zuma and Trump have a lot in common in the sense that they both succeeded presidents who are kind of known for like respectability. We have Thabo Mbeki in our country, who was like the respectable guy, you know, like he had a decorum to him. Not that he was actually necessarily good. He was horrible in many ways.
But he generally was like, he understood that he was in a professional position.
Yeah, he put on the show, essentially, of liberalism. And Obama, same thing, he put on the show of liberalism. And it's no surprise that after a relatively failed liberal president, you get someone who is not as much of a liberal. You get someone who's much more of a populist, or really a fake populist in these cases. I think that's a good explanation. All right. Next question. Speaking of Trump, Anon asks, "What is your opinion on Trump being acquitted a second time and the hypocrisy of the GOP?" Oh yeah, it's totally about power. I wished we could have had him be impeached. But there was no way the party was going to break. There's too much invested in the Trump cult. And like Republicans who go against them, they end up losing their power. And it's the Trump train all the way. And yeah, it's complete hypocrisy. The GOP, Mitch McConnell, that Ninja Turtle, he got up on that stage and said that Trump was personally liable for all of those things. And then he still didn't vote to, you know, impeach him. So yeah, it's total hypocrisy. They only care about power. They're ghouls, in a way. You know, the Republican Party is just full of ghouls.
What's the matter? You haven't seen a ghoul smooth skin?
But there's please hire myth. Callum to be in the next Fallout game.
Please don't. I must have missed that reboot where Mitch McConnell was the fifth Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
oh my word. Okay. Next question. Let's moving away from politics. What are your current goals for the channel? Any milestones you're looking forward to? Actually, I'm looking forward to hitting 1,000 subscribers so we can get the community tab. That would be nice. So we can actually tell you guys what's going on.
I'm looking forward to that as well. I'm also looking forward to 2000 so we can get sponsors, so we can tell you about Raid Shadow Legends.
Oh, man.
Which is a fun new game on the iPhone.
Yeah, the CIA took out Callum because he was doing a Raid Shadow Legends sponsorship without actually signing the contract. So
they shot me in the throat, but I'm back.
He's back. Milestones would be great. 1,000 subscribers is really, the golden arc at that point. Like, if we can get 1,000 subscribers, I would be incredibly happy and grateful and just so thankful because, we could do more things. And also, we're hopefully appealing to more people. And, the bigger the channel gets, the bigger our reach becomes, I've said it. I would totally be open to having someone like Contra on to talk about how she doesn't know anything about video games.
I'd like to get some more streaming done, to be honest. That's kind of been my pet side project. And, we have a couple of other series, quote unquote, in the mix that I would like to get on the cutting room floor. But it's just a bit tough right now with our schedules. Emilio's got a pretty much full-time job, and I'm still looking for work and also writing a book at the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's just really tough to get all of this stuff happening in 1 month.
Yeah. Don't worry, guys. We're still committed to providing the content to you. But it is tough. But as we scale, maybe if we get bigger, we can hire someone to do the editing. That would be nice.
That would be brilliant.
So yeah,
because that's most of the work, I think.
Yeah. Honestly, the editing is most of the work. But I do think there are milestones to look forward to. We look forward to having you guys, gals and pals, joining us along the way.
Do you have any really lofty in the future goals?
Okay, this is gonna be weird, but I would like to really, really do a. Okay, so hear me out. I would really like to do a big. Leftist YouTuber big debate about who is the best faction for the Mojave in Fallout New Vegas. I would I would really like to get a bunch of prominent left tubers together and to have a big long debate, maybe 2 or 3 hours, talking about who is the best faction, why they're the best faction, and hashing out the entire political, because I really think Fallout New Vegas is one of the more complicated games politically. Because it tries to do a lot and show a lot of different ideologies, and it didn't have the space and freedom to really do all of that, there's a lot of that was left on the cutting room floor. So I would really like to do let's talk to people and see what their opinions are, because I know H Bomber Guy, for example, has his Fallout New Vegas is the best and here's why video, and I would like to do something like that, but more with multiple people, that's a long-term goal for me. What about you?
This is going to sound very anti our message, but I would like to get lots of money.
So you want to get
for the express purpose of I want a dedicated recording space.
Yeah, that
for
would
us
be nice.
Because I think you might hear with some of the audio gaps and things in this video, it's tough because we have to do this over Discord. And neither of us has very stable internet, so it would be great if we could record this in the same building. And also, it means that we would only ever have to buy one PS5, and we could just have I just hit my microphone. We could just have a room with that in it, with a TV, and then we can do some research there and stuff. And I think that would be a great investment that I'd really like to see happen. And we can get the KFC console.
Yeah, we can get the KFC console, and then I can get the Domino's console, and then we can do a game review. All right, yeah. Thanks for that. That was a good question. Let's see. Anon asks, on a completely political note, do you feel like the US is heading in a more positive direction with a new president? What would you like to see done better? Firstly, I think we're getting a lot of US questions because most of our viewers are from the US, so... Yeah, I follow U.S. politics quite closely because what happens there affects us. But let's see.
I do not, because it has no impact on the competitive Pokemon scene.
I am, I'm the foreign, affairs, foreign relations information guy. You are the Pokemon correspondent.
I'm the back of the fridge. I'm the back of the fridge correspondent.
You'll tell us what's going on in the Kanto region, you know. I'll tell you what's going on in Syria.
I wish I hadn't stuck this label to myself, because I don't really know that much about Pokemon anymore.
It's too late, Caleb. It's too late. You're the Pokemon guy.
Shit. I wish it would. I'll change it in like 3 videos.
Yeah, sure. You can stage a coup, reinvent yourself. So yeah, I think in some respects the US is heading in a better direction. Any direction is better than fascism, right? But you know, obviously Joe Biden is not like the guy that we all would have wanted to see. He, you know, is kind of a very fence sitting kind of person. He's not really taking the kinds of measures that we thought he would. Well, we would hope that he would. He should be doing a lot, you know. He's made a lot of promises on the campaign trail: stimulus, minimum wage, reforms to ICE, you know, and you know, climate change and all that stuff. He hasn't really brought through on many of those things. It's not really good. Honestly,
I have to ask secretary or something to leave.
Yeah, I think so. But it's a whole process. Basically, what I would like to see being done better is basically just, okay, so this is going to sound, you know, very liberal, but I feel like maybe scaling back the goals, but actually delivering on those, I think would be better. Because like, yeah, everyone wants everyone deserves, you know, the $2,000 stimulus. And of course, you know, people in South Africa, we also deserve, you know, economic stimulus as well. Pay the grants and so on and so forth.
That would be delightful, but
but you know,
let's leave dreams for sleeping, yeah. Shall we?
But you know, maybe scale back those things, but then actually deliver on them, right? You know, the longer you drag out, like, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, guys. You know, a better America is coming. The worst it's going to be when you don't deliver on them, right? And even probably Bernie would have had many of these issues. The system is not really designed to really do good things. But Biden definitely could be mitigating more harm than he actually is. All right. So Anon,
we might have to speed up on some of these questions, and we might not get to all the questions, but just know that if you did send a question and we didn't get to it, we really appreciate you, and we'll save the question for next Q&A.
We only have 4 questions left.
Oh, never mind.
All right. So, Anon asks, will the government pay me to draw monster girls under a socialist government? Will I ever be freed from our capitalistic furry overlords?
If I think I know who asked this question, but let me just say, if you vote for me this coming fall, then I can guarantee you that monster girl drawing will be aided and abetted by my campaign.
I feel like there should be a government grant for drawing monster girls. I think generally speaking, the serious answer is probably you'd definitely be paid by people to draw monster girls. People won't stop.
I think you could maybe apply for like an art grant if you were doing something crazy.
Yeah, I mean, people apply for art grants to develop video games, right? But this, like, generally speaking, if in a socialist society, you know, you've got more people who have more money because they take home more of the means of production, because they own it. People still have fetishes. People still want to draw their OCs. Most people still don't want to put in the time to actually draw. You, Anon, you know, you draw monster girls good, I assume. So yeah, people will probably just pay you to draw monster girls.
You know what? If we ever get elected into our rightful seat in power, you can do some of the building art for New Marksburg.
Yeah, you know, we just have to depose King Graham, and then we could glorious people's revolution, monster girl revolution, win.
We'll just have like various characters from our streams on different buildings.
Here's my hot take: monster girls are better than furries. If that is a separate thing, I don't know if that is, but I do like monster girls more than furries.
No, it depends. Sometimes they're a bit more anthropomorphized, but.
Let's not get dragged into the discourse.
let's drag on, shall we?
Okay. Here's the last political question. What is the most simple way for me to explain the difference between socialism and communism to my friends? Do you want to take that, or should I?
I can try, and then you can correct me.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Socialism is like communism for the lower levels. So if you can't support yourself, it has very communist tendencies. But for the upper levels, it's capitalism. So it's very much like a competitive business and taxation so that we can support the dependables.
So you're referring really to the social democracy definition of socialism. So to give you a quick overview, Karl Marx and Engels and those guys, they used socialism and communism kind of interchangeably. Basically, Marx was talking about two kinds of communism, really. He was talking about a lower form of communism, which might be called socialism, and a higher form of communism, which, of course, is communism. Basically, communism is at its core, right, a classless, stateless, moneyless society, right? No classes, no states, no economic classes, no state, and no money, right? You kind of have to have all of these components. I think maybe you can have some wiggle room on the money, but it's definitely got to be classless and stateless. That's like the best form of society, right? Where there are no unjust hierarchies, you're completely free. Society provides for you, you provide for society, et cetera, et cetera. Socialism then is, I'm not going to say grounded, but it's a much more involved definition, because like socialism would be something like, decommodification, workers owning the means of production. It's not necessarily that you've eliminated classes, right, in society. Maybe you've greatly reduced them, but maybe they still might exist. You don't actually necessarily get rid of the government, the state. You can't have a state with a socialism. But generally speaking, you're moving towards communism when you are doing socialism. You are, doing things like Callum said. You are trying to provide for people. You're trying to expand social safety nets. You're trying to, provide public utilities and services and so on and so forth. Some people think of socialism as more social democracy, and Bernie Sanders really kind of popularized that because he calls himself a socialist. I think he secretly is a socialist, but he pushes social democrat policies because those are actually what's effective right now. That's the way I would describe it, really. Communism.
And hopefully that's simple enough for you to explain to your friends in a 30-hour podcast special.
Communism is, yeah, I don't know. Socialism is when the government...
One sentence. No, wait, one sentence. You're only allowed one sentence. Go.
Socialism is when you have... Socialism is when you can buy a switch from a store. Communism is when everyone has a switch.
There we go.
Okay. Second last question. Have you guys heard of the Lucasfilm Civil War? And if so, what are your thoughts on the whole debacle?
I have heard nothing but the Lucasfilm Civil War from a friend of mine. I have no idea what's going on.
Okay, I do. So basically, the Lucasfilm Civil War is a shadow conspiracy, apparently, that there's a secret war going on between Kathleen Kennedy and...
The Mandalorian guy.
Yeah, and... No, it's not Feige. It's Favreau. Yeah, Jon Favreau, and those guys. And Jon Favreau and the other guy who's working on The Mandalorian. What's his name?
I have no idea, but I've heard about this. So it's like... People are saying like they're adding Luke Skywalker and things to the spoilers. By the way, they're adding like Luke Skywalker and things to certain shows, like recognizable Star Wars properties to other shows, so that they can capitalize it on it or something.
No, the Civil War is literally that the Lucasfilm is currently experiencing a tug of war between people like Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, that's his name, Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni and Kathleen Kennedy, because quote-unquote, Favreau and Filoni are like the real fans and they know how to do the real Star Wars, like, they're involved in The Mandalorian and stuff like that, and Kathleen Kennedy just wants to ruin Star Wars with her SJW agenda or whatever, and that's why they make the sequels. I think it's manufactured outrage, really. I don't think there's actually a civil war going on.
I think it's misogyny.
Yeah. Kathleen Kennedy is a producer. She basically has produced a lot of value for Disney. They're not going to get rid of her, right? She's kind of been spearheading a lot of these things. She's not really as involved creatively as most people seem to think that she is. you know, in a way, she's kind of allowed people like Dave Filoni to really run, you know, with certain aspects of the thing. But ultimately, I think it's manufactured outrage that is useful for nerds who are angry about that Star Wars has gay characters in it, you know, or trans characters in it.
Yeah.
You know, people. Yeah. That's what I think it is. I think it's a very convenient cover because, like, those guys don't really like Star Wars, right? Because if they did, then they would see George Lucas being like, America's the evil empire. I modeled the rebels after, like, the Viet Cong. And they would, you know, their heads would explode. But this idea that there are some, like, true Star Wars fans that are, like, trying to hijack, you know, I've heard, like, you know, they were planning on, like, the conspiracy was like, oh, yeah, Dave Filoni and John Favreau were going to, like, retcon the sequel trilogy. But, like, you know, they're absolutely not going to do that, right, guys?
Yeah, no, they absolutely wouldn't.
Just log on to moveon.com, you know? Just I don't
they,
like this.
They would make another sequel trilogy. Yeah, I've heard that someone's making another three movies.
Hmm. Yeah, look, I don't like the sequel trilogy, but I think the problems with the sequel trilogy are because of capitalism. Because they are, like Callum said earlier, they are unwilling to take a risk.
They're trying to hit you with that... they're trying to please fans by giving them something different enough that it's unique, but so similar to the thing that they were originally a fan of that they would still have those like nostalgic feelings. Yeah. It's nostalgia bait while trying to disguise itself as a new thing.
Yeah, they don't necessarily want to take creative choices. Like I thought parts of Last Jedi were really interesting, you know, deconstructing the whole like issue with the Jedi and stuff like that. But there's no cohesive vision, right? You've got Rian Johnson trying to do his thing in Last Jedi. Then, you know, you've got basically the remake of New Hope in The Force Awakens. And then you've got, like, the absolute mess that, like, ignores parts of Last Jedi, but also kind of doesn't. It's like, the Rise of Skywalker is, like, a soft reboot of, like, the sequel trilogy in a way. It's really weird. And it's really incoherent. And
I haven't seen Last Skywalker yet.
Yeah, it's not good.
That is weird to hear.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. The Last Skywalker is really kind of like them trying to reboot the whole sequel trilogy in one movie, in a way. Like,
okay,
they're speedrunning it.
Let's boil this down to one thing: the grand Lucasfilm conspiracy. It doesn't exist. Angry incels are mad that a lady gets to decide what happens to their laser sword story fest. And that there are boys kissing in it now, so they want to be mad about it.
Yeah.
Don't pay attention
to it. All right. So now we've got our last question, and I've saved this one for last because I think it's the best one to go out on. Anon asks, are there any games you are currently looking forward to that you haven't gotten? Oh, that haven't been released yet? Go.
No.
Really? There are no games?
I haven't like been very active in looking for released, like, soon-to-be-released titles.
So there are no games on your Steam wishlist that you really want?
I have games on my Steam wishlist, but they're already out, and I just can't afford them. But that's the thing, isn't it? I actually wanted to say with the whole capitalism thing is I haven't played a new game lately that hasn't been a stuttery, just terribly optimized mess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like my computer can't play these games. I check the recommended, the minimum stats and everything. And sure, I may be a bit down below the recommended, but when did below recommended above minimum mean that you're playing a slideshow?
True.
Change the minimum.
Change
and the reason they do that, yeah, make it a bit higher. Yeah. Say, like, actually, no, if you want to play this game well, it has to be this. But they won't do that because they want people to look at those and go, oh, hey, my computer can run that, and then buy this game, and they don't care whether you can actually play it or not. And that's what new games are now. It's tossing a dice to see if the developer cares enough about me playing this game as to actually put the effort in. And most of the time it comes up, no. So I'm not really looking forward to any games.
Okay, well, I have a couple of games that I'm actually looking forward to that are not released yet. I'll just talk about two of them quickly. So first up is Death Trash. If you haven't heard of Death Trash, I highly recommend you look it up. It's the most punk Fallout game I've ever seen in my life. It takes place in a actual, you know, Yeah, it takes place in an apocalyptic world. It's an RPG with real-time combat. You play a character. I think there's a button to puke. There's a button to puke, and there's flesh monsters everywhere.
Okay. Did I design this game in my sleep and then not remember?
Maybe that's why it's taking so long to come out.
this sounds like Postal, but like Fallout.
It's such a fascinating game because like the first picture I ever saw of Death Trash was the player character who's dressed like a cyberpunk talking to a flesh kraken about being its friend, and I'm like, I want to play this game.
That is a fun thing, but okay. And I'm gonna stagger these rounds in between each game that you talk about. Okay. Here's another thing. Let games get demos again. I am sick of seeing game trailers. Oh, they tell you nothing.
This one does have a demo.
Okay, well, this one's a good egg. Check out Dead Trash, because Death Trash, because apparently it's got a demo. But like no other game I know has demos anymore.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the last time I saw a demo, because I didn't.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I think we talked about this in the video game price episode, or maybe we should do an episode on it as well. But anyway, okay, so Death Trash, good game. I think it's going to be real fun. If the idea of a flesh beast, talking to you and wanting to be your friend is your cup of tea, check it out. Game two, Shardpunk Vermintide. Which is a very funny name, which keeps making me think of other games. Basically, it's
like Vermintide.
Yeah, actually, it's really like Vermintide, because you play as a group of heroes, XCOM style, trying to survive in a city overrun by ratmen.
Okay, so it's Vermintide.
Well, it's turn-based.
You want to play Vermintide, it's but sci-fi.
No, it's steampunk and turn-based.
Okay, so you want to play worse Vermintide.
I like turn-based games a lot. I like slow games where I get to think about what I'm doing. And, the idea of a roguelike survival game where you have to make it from safe house to safe house, battling through a city overrun by, sentient rats, fighting them with your steampunk guns and stuff like that, that's just really, really cool to me. I played the demo. I really enjoyed it. I shot a bunch of rats. I threw a bunch of grenades. It was a fun time. The aesthetic is really cool.
Is this by the same people who did Vermintide?
No, it's an indie developer.
This is so weird. Like, did they just get really inspired by it, or did this happen to be in this development at the same time?
This has been in development for a couple of years. They were inspired by certain things. I think Vermintide was one. Maybe that's what's called Vermintfall. But they were also inspired by XCOM and Darkest Dungeon. So
it's so weird that it's also Ratman. That's a Ratman apocalypse.
But I will say this: the Ratmen are a lot more dangerous, I think, in Vermintfall, because they have guns themselves and they will shoot you. So, like in the demo that I played, I fought like mostly like basic rats, with like a dinky pistol or a knife, and then at the end of that level was a giant rat with a minigun.
So what you're telling me is that you're really keen to play this game where a new species of sentient person has come about that can use and operate tools, and you really want to exterminate them.
Well, in my defense, the city has already fallen, so I think it's implied that you're a refugee fleeing out of it. So,
fair enough. This is just Biker Mice from Mars, but like gritty reboot edition.
And it's steampunk, Callum. Everything's got gears.
Steampunk games have a really big thing about rats, like Dishonored steampunk as well. And I mean, I guess it's whale punk.
We should do a bonus episode that's just about rats and video games. I think like rats. I think like two people would watch it, but I genuinely think there's something to talk about, like rats and video games.
That is weird.
It's true, though, isn't it? Like, steampunk does have a thing for rats.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
All right, so all right, so the last game that I want to talk about, and I promise I will be quick, is the game that I'm maybe the most excited for, and it is an immersive sim survival horror stealth game.
Oh my god, what?
Yes. Have you heard about...
Why do you frame me like this?
Have you heard about Gloomwood?
No. It sounds like a... a very, very, very disturbing celebrity's house.
So Gloomwood is Dishonored if Dishonored was more sad, and also they had lots of more guns. No,
why
I'm joking.
Do you hate yourself? why do you do this to yourself?
I don't know, Caleb. I don't know. Gloomwood is a game in the vein of the old school Thief, right? It's a immersive sim. So, like, it's a first person game. You can manipulate the environment, like, fully, you know. You've got to reload your gun one bullet at a time. And they have some really interesting weapons. They have, like, the Burgess folding shotgun and an old timey revolver and a sword cane. It's cool. But then you can stealth around. Your enemies have, like, all the, you know, the things. They low light vision, et cetera, et cetera. You're in a steampunk city that has fallen to a mysterious plague or a cult, and you've got to, like, figure out what's going on. So you have to navigate through twisted corridors and sewers, and it just looks... The sound design is just amazing. You know, I played the demo again. This game has a demo. It was phenomenal. You know,
Man, you're really putting stakes in my no games have demos anymore point.
Yeah, I used my psychic powers to say, oh yeah, Callum was definitely going to say no games have demos, and then I was just going to pick three games that deliberately have demos. But yeah, indie gamers I think still make demos. Indie devs they still have demos. But yeah, the Gloomwood is definitely one to look out for. The fact that you have to keep track of your ammo manually. That's good in my book. I love games like this. And it has no magic for me not to use. I could just shoot people with impunity.
Okay, well, I'm out then. I need magic in my games. Even if it's just the magic and whimsy of, like, happiness.
I don't know if it is, if there is actually magic. I know it's, like, very... It's very, like... I'm not going to say grimdark, but it is very gritty. Maybe there is magic, but you can't use it. Maybe the enemies are, like, magical. It's kind of like Thief in that way. But I don't know. I think it just looks really fun. Anyway.
Well, it does sound better than anything. And in my first round, I neglected to mention that indie developers have been putting the work in and developing some interesting stuff. But, like, I just haven't seen anything that I've been really excited for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You gotta be real keen to dig through all the trash to find the gems, you know?
Yeah.
That's the problem with indies. There's no curation, really, in a large scale. So the good and the bad get lumped into the same smoothie. But anyway, I would... right now, we're at the end of the video. So right about now, you should be seeing the patrons who generously donated their money to give us, you know, an opportunity to rant about video games on the internet. So right now, you should be seeing the patrons at the Megabyte tier. Thanks, guys, for supporting us.
Thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. You are the very first steps in our journey to owning a recording space, which will help us, well, obviously owning, you know, gear that will help us make better videos more feasibly now than a whole recording space, but eventually one day.
And we'd like to personally thank the patrons at the Gigabyte tier, Forrest, Ilias Dope, and Amber Sleem. You guys have donated at the $5 a month tier, so we're very grateful for that. Thank you so much.
You guys are the bomb diggity.
Yes. And for more takes like that, follow us on our socials. That's in the link in the description. Subscribe to Bite Marks if you're watching this for some reason and you aren't subscribed. Check us out on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Do you have something to say about Todd? Callum?
You know what? I don't even know if I can work up. What's that?
Oh, no!
In the distance.
I see it. What is it, Callum? It's getting closer.
It's not Elder Scrolls 6. What the fuck are you doing, Todd?
Oh, it's just a dog. Never mind.
What are you doing, Todd? You announced this game like... maybe 3 years ago. I'm not even sure anymore. It's been so long.
Just a crumb of Elder Scrolls 6 news.
Just let me know. We are all assuming it's an Elsewhere because, like, it doesn't look like Black Marsh, but we don't even know that. We have an eighth of a trailer. Come on, Todd.
And you never will, because Skyrim is definitely going to be released onto the KFC console, and that's going to take precedence.
Come on, Todd. So leave Fallout alone. Fallout 78 is dead. Just leave it. Just leave it alone and make a better game, Todd. Please.
Yeah. If they can stop developing Anthem, you can stop developing Fallout 76.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So thank you,
just
everyone.
Just still birth it. That was terrible. I might have to edit that out.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us on another Bite Marks episode. This has been a really fun Q&A. Our Curious Cat is available in the description. Please keep sending us questions. We love answering them.
We will definitely be doing another Q&A, probably like at 300 or maybe 500 mark subscribers.
Yeah, you guys definitely have some fun ones. So thank you again, and good night, everyone.
Thank you so much for watching us. I love you all. You're all my comrades. Send me those orcs. Good night.